Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today's text, Canto 8 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 11, text 8. Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim saraswati vitsatato jaya madure. So this chapter is titled King Indra Annihilates the Demons. It's a warfare. That's not very good. It's not very good text to deal, it's chapter to deal with, because we are also having so many wars on the planet now. It appears that war is inevitable, because since time immemorial, wars have always been there, right? According to the Vedic literature. So anyway, let's see what we can get from this text and what we can go home with. So, text 8. Tadidam kalarasanam. Jagat pashyanti surayaha. Narishanti naso shanti. Tata yoyam apanditaha. So translation and purport by Divine Grace, Srila Bhacharan of Indra Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah, we should not be envious of Prabhupada. If we are not appreciating someone, means we are envious of the person. So Prabhupada has given us so much of purports, so we should be appreciative. And just to have our lips open and say Jai, that's not a difficult thing. Jai means victory. We are also part of that victory when we proclaim that victorious, when we make that victorious proclamation for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, we are all past and parcels of Prabhupada. ISKCON means Prabhupada. And we are part of ISKCON, so means we are part and parcel of Prabhupada. So when we say victory, we are also part of that victory. So, translation, seeing the movements of time, those who are cognizant of real truth neither rejoice nor lament for different circumstances. Therefore, because you are jubilant due to your victory, you should be considered not very learned. Please responsibly repeat. Seeing the movements of time. So we know who is speaking, right? You've been following the trends of this episode. You know who is speaking? Who knows who is speaking? Huh? Bali Maharaj. Yeah. So he's supposedly a demon, but he's also very astute in philosophy. Spiritual philosophy for that matter. In other words, someone can be very, very philosophically inclined and could be very highly learned. But those are not really the essential ingredients. They are not the criteria to determine who is actually divinely inclined. Because even their suras, they are highly evolved in knowledge. Just like we find the case of Sukracharya. I mean, he knew even past, present, and future. He could even resuscitate people from the dead. If someone is acting like Sukracharya on this planet now, to say for instance in India, he will get millions and millions of followers. He brings people back to life from dead. He'll get millions and millions of followers. But to bring someone back from life to death, does it make him really divine? No. It's not. According to the Bhagavatam. So, anyway, let's go to the proper purport. Bali Maharaj knew that Indra, king of heaven, was extremely powerful. Certainly more powerful than himself. Nonetheless, Bali Maharaj challenged Indra by saying that Indra was not a very learned person. In Bhagavad Gita 2:11, Krishna rebuked Arjuna by saying, Asocham avasocious twam pragya vadam chabashasi gatasum agatasum cha nanu suchanti panditaha. While speaking learned words, you, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, you are mourning. For what is not worthy of grief? Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Thus, as Krishna challenged Arjuna by saying that he was not a pandit or a learned person, Bali Maharaj also challenged King Indra and his associates. In this material world, everything happens under the influence of time. Consequently, for a learned person who sees how things are taking place, there is no question of being sorry or happy because of the waves of material nature. After all, since we are being carried away by these waves, what is the meaning of being jubilant or morose? One who is fully conversant with the laws of nature is never jubilant or morose because of nature's activities. In the Bhagavad Gita 2:14, Krishna advises that one be tolerant, tams titikshaswa bharata. Following this advice of Krishna's, one should not be morose or unhappy because of circumstantial changes. This is a symptom of a devotee. A devotee carries out his duty in Krishna consciousness and is never unhappy in awkward circumstances. He has full faith that in such circumstances, Krishna protects his devotees. Therefore, a devotee never deviates from his prescribed duty of devotional service. The material qualities of jubilation and moroseness are present even in the demigods, who are very highly situated in the upper planetary systems. Therefore, when one is undisturbed by the so-called favorable and unfavorable circumstances of this material world, he should be understood to be Brahma Bhuta, or self-realized. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakanchati. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. When one is undisturbed by material circumstances, he should be understood to be on the transcendental stage, above the reactions of the three modes of material nature. I'm very much conscious of time because I know all of you are very busy. Brahmachari is here in this temple. We all hear about them all over the world. So we don't want to take your time. And this verse is actually talking to us, people who are trying to be devotees of Lord Krishna. Isn't it? The purport here, Prabhupada is really addressing all of our need to be able to live in a Vaishnava community. People coming from different cultural backgrounds. People who are having different natures and nurtures. They come together to live in a particular place, within a particular domain, to cultivate Krishna consciousness. That is a little bit difficult. It is difficult for people to live together. This is one reason why in the Western countries, some people, they don't like to marry. Because they can't really cope with having to adjust themselves to the needs of others or to the needs of the environment or the needs of some circumstances. In other words, when people are highly maladjusted. They can't fit into a community. They can't fit into a communal setting or within even a family setting. They want to be independent. They want to live on their own life. They want to live in their own world. They don't want any disturbance. But when we come to the devotional community, we are bound to have disturbances. We are bound to have some challenges, sociological challenges, economic challenges, political challenges, devotional challenges. Even the devotee who even sleeps with you in the same apartment, the same ashram, could be used to put some test to you. So the point is, Bali is representing Asura Bhava. In the Padma Purana, it is mentioned, Dvabhuta Sarvalokesmi Deva Asura Evacha. Vishnu Bhakta Smito Deva Asuras Tadviparyaya. The Asuras, they are Tadviparyaya. They are opposite of the Vishnu. The qualities of the Vishnu devotees or the Krishna devotees, the Asuras, those who are imbued with phenomenological mindset, they are completely at opposite polarity. And this is also exemplified in the modus vivendi or the manner of approach to a practical reality of life by Bali Maharaj. So, here, instead of Bali Maharaj appreciating the fact that they have been defeated, he challenges Indra. That you are jubilating? You're not very learned. Because a learned man is not supposed to jubilate when he's victorious. You just claim to be highly elevated devotees of Lord Vishnu, but you are quasi demons. This is implication of Bali Maharaj's statement here. Also, we have this type of mindset. We have this type of mindset. When we see some devotee, maybe he has not acted according to appease our curiosity, then we find some sastric statement to back up our criticism. Instead of appreciating the fact that I should be in position to help this devotee, we criticize him. We say, you deal like this, you deal like this. Therefore, you're very fallen. And when we tell somebody you're very fallen, what it implies in essence that we're telling the person, I am very elevated. And you are very fallen. Isn't it? Jai Bali Maharaj is saying, tell it. Bali Maharaj indirectly telling Indra that you are just a bunch of nonsense. You are not devotee. You just think that you are a devotee. This is a Bhakta Mani now. It's just a devotee in mind. You are not. Because look at your quality. You are jubilating. Because Lord Krishna has mentioned in the Gita that self-realized person, he has no bearings with these external factors because he has attained some good position or he has attained some particular material objective. He has acquired some facility and so he's very happy. He's very elated. He's bought a new car, a new limousine, so he's very elated. And the same limousine has an accident, smashes onto a big lorry. And then he becomes morose and he goes into depression and then he has to go and see some psychologists and all this other type of stuff. This happens. Or someone has been very desirous to have a very nice wife. I remember one case some time back. This professor, he's my friend, and he was trying to marry one girl, one lawyer. And then all of a sudden, the girl comes to tell him that, no, we have to abrogate the whole thing. And he became very disturbed. In fact, he called me on the phone. I was like, by the fastest car, you need to drive like eight hours before you get to his campus. But he called me, Vasudev, you have to come here. Because he was in anxiety. He became completely depressed. So then I said, tell me, what is the problem? He said, if you love me, come here. So well, what can I do? I'm trying to be a devotee, and although I don't have any money, but I have to get devotees to lend me some Lakshmi to be able to go and see my friend, the professor. And when I went there, what was the problem? Problem is the girl who is supposedly engaged with him has called it a quit. And he's been very depressed. And so he wants some spiritual friend of his to come and give him sukha, to give him some counseling. And I appreciated the fact that he had faith in me that if I could go there, that he may get some relief. But this is a situation, a gross example. This is a gross example which shows that people become happy when they attain their desires, and if there is some so-called misfortune, in quote, these same people, they become very, very depressed. And Prabhupada again draws our attention in his purport to the Bhagavad Gita, wherein Lord Krishna says that we should, Prabhupada uses, translate the last line of 214, tans titiksha swa bharata. He said, just try to tolerate. He didn't say, you must tolerate. Must. Nowadays is considered to be a pejorative term. You can use that word must to yourself. I must do this. But you don't tell somebody, you must do this. It's considered pejorative. Because it's like, you know, even your wife, even your child, nowadays in America, you can't even tell your child you must do this. The child will call the police. This is emotional abuse. Yes, they will call the police and say, this is, my father is threatening me, this is emotional abuse. Oh yes. I remember one day I was in California, and the gentleman that invited me to come from Pennsylvania, he had a daughter who was in high school. The daughter was on holidays. So she kept sleeping till late in the morning before she wakes up. So he was in anxiety that, so he wanted to make sure that at least even though they're on holidays, the girl has time to do her reading. And just by knocking on the girl's door, his house, a big house. He knocked on the girl's door, his daughter knocked on the door and said, so the girl came and opened the door and said, what is it? He said, you're supposed to wake up before now so as to get some studies done and do helping some household job. He said, Dad, you try this next time, I'm going to call the police for you. So, the point is, people want to be comfortable. They don't want to deal with the realities of life. Now, in as much as this text is concerned, Bali Maharaj is simply finding fault with Indra. This is called fault finding. Now, there's a difference between a critique and criticism. Criticism means fault finding. A critique means you find the goods in that situation, and you also bring out the things that require to be addressed. But criticism means, I just find a fault in you. And that's what Bali Maharaj is doing. It's called Asura Bhava. Demoniac mentality. We call it demoniac mentality within our devotional circles, but outside there, we try to, you know, we frame it in a very good way, so we call it a phenomenological mindset. So, it is very easy for someone to develop a phenomenological mindset, And the best thing that one could do is to actually be able to assess and reassess himself, to be able to rectify himself for whatever little anantas that we have, instead of pointing accusing fingers to everyone else. It is very easy to point accusing fingers to someone. You can say, yes, Bali Maharaj is highly learned. But what about Indra? Indra is also highly learned. And if we try to find some dirt in a brand new white cloth from the factory, we will find small stain there, perhaps from the machines or whatever. Or even from the knittings, we'll find some stain in a brand new white cloth from the factory. And therefore, so to find some dirt in something, it's a matter of, you know, using some proper instruments, either magnifying glasses or whatever, and you'll be able to find something, some dirt there. But then we should use the magnifying glasses to find dirt in ourselves. That is called reassessment and reassessment, or evaluation and self-evaluation. And by doing that, we'll be able to have a proper orientation in terms of how to rectify ourselves from any misgiving. We do have misgivings in our devotional culture. For instance, the concept of communication is even a problem to us. But suppose someone has a problem of communication, or suppose the person that is heading you, your head of department or your head of ashram, lacks communication skill. And he comes to tell you something that you feel, oh, this is not worthy of it, because he's supposed to, or she's supposed to tell me in a very polite manner. Now, there are two options there. We may react or overreact, or we may just subscribe to whatever the person says, and to be able to bury the hatchet and try to see how best to help that person, because even a child could help the parent. Even a child could help the parent, but not in a very critical way. One lady at University of Baltimore, when we had a program at the University of Baltimore, and this lady, she told me how that when she delivered, since she delivered like 6 months or so, she was not chanting. And then one day, her little toddler, she was just creeping, and then she went to scoop out her chanting bag, pick up the chanting bag, and creep again to the mother and give it to the mother. She gave the chanting bag. She couldn't even figure out where she kept the chanting bag. But the little girl went to scoop out the chanting bag, picked the chanting bag, and took it to the mother. And then the mother could read the meaning to it. Oh, here's my guru mother telling me you have to start chanting. No, so even a child could actually help the mother, could help the parent, but it's not that the child goes to pick holes with the parents. In other words, this is a typical example how we should act when we find some misgiving in a devotee. This little girl, what she did is a good example. Little girl, while she doesn't know how to talk, to say, oh, mommy, why have you not chanted? You've not chanted your hands, mommy. No. But she did something. She helped out in some way by bringing the chanting beads to the mother. So now the mother can say, well, I can't find my chanting bag. The child has brought it to her. And so in the same way, when we find our devotees in trouble, we should think of ways on how to help them. Instead of saying, oh, he's very fallen, oh, he can't control his senses, I know him, come on. We were there together and we stayed together in that, we went the same training together. I know how weak he is. I mean, it's like, you know, one time, Lord Chaitanya went into a high barber and he was just chanting, Gopi, 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 Gopi. And then one of the students came by. And then he had the Lord Chaitanya chanting, Gopi, Gopi, Gopi. So he was very disturbed. So he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you are supposed to chant Krishna. You're chanting Gopi, Gopi, Gopi. This is not in the Vaishnava Sampradaya. You know, people, when they understand the scriptures, just like the spiritual master, and it's also very easy to find fault with the spiritual master. It's also very easy to find fault with the other fellow devotees. So, Lord Chaitanya was actually going to hit him with a stick. And then he ran. He ran back to the other Brahmins. When he ran back to the other Brahmins, then he was telling the other Brahmins what he observed, what he saw when he went to see Lord Chaitanya. And how Lord Chaitanya even carried a stick, was pursuing him to beat him. And then that was a chance for all of the other students who are nursing some grudges against Lord Chaitanya to bring out all the things in their heart. Somebody will say, we all school together. Why you guys think that we have to be worshipping him? So, we may have some internal dialogue. And we are waiting for appropriate time to bring it up. We are waiting for the little fault we'll be able to find in our fellow devotees so as to be able to, you know, met out all that we've been nursing within our hearts. So here Bali, being very versatile in the scriptures, he knew that this type of jubilation is not worth it. But we may even know something and we want to address it. But our intention, our motivation is the problem. What is our motivation? To destroy him, to bring him down, or to help him? So Krishna is looking at our motivation. So here, Bali is engaged in what is called destructive criticism. There is constructive criticism and there is destructive criticism. Destructive criticism means that we don't have good intentions for the person. The spiritual master can also criticize us, but it's called constructive criticism. He has a good heart. It's like a child who has been spanked by the parent. The parent had no good intention. I mean, had no bad intention for the child. The child is creeping into the near the fire, and the parent just rushes up to pick up the child and perhaps spank the child. Never to do that next time. But it is with good intention. The conditioned soul does also a spank, but the idea is to annihilate the recipient of that spank. And so that makes the difference between the devas and the asura. Asura is thinking, asura's mindset is completely of a destructive orientation, whereas the deva's mindset is that of reviving the Krishna consciousness in the individual. Again, another striking example is the case of Narada, when Narada had to encounter the sons of the treasure of the heavenly planets, Manigriva and Nalakuvera. They were nude, completely in an abominable situation. But Now they had an internal dialogue. He was thinking, how can I help these guys? They are involved in abominable activity, but how can I help them? So, again, this is showing us how we should be able to help our people from their predicaments with proper Krishna consciousness motivation. And now, the case of the demigods and the asuras, we hear the trend from even the previous chapter, how there was a war. And the war, tell us, who can tell us? What was the root of the war? The war was rooted in envy. Envy. And most wars, Prabhupada mentioned in one of the texts, one of his purposes in chapter 2 of the Gita, that someone who is envious of Lord Krishna should not even touch the Bhagavad Gita. The envy is so grave. It's so grave. The Prabhupada mentioned, they should not even touch the Bhagavad Gita. But all of us, we are carrying this some elements of envy when we find ourselves in the material world. And it's not only, like we find the case of the Pandavas and their cousins. They were just envious of the Pandavas. The Kauravas were just envious of the Pandavas. And most wars that are fought are based on envy. Kings, even the days of yore, kings will attack other kings based on envy. Even nowadays, we find that even in matrimonial homes, couples can be envious of each other. Someone is having a bigger salary, and then instead of the other partner appreciating and really encouraging, he or she could be envious of her partner. Why is he having a higher salary than I? Or why is she having a salary than I? I'm supposed to be the issuer of the house. I'm supposed to have a higher salary. These things are going on. So, envy is a stigma that could propel us into being blinded by the illusory energy. And just like Lord Krishna mentions in the Gita that we should be tolerant. We should try to tolerate the sociological factors as well as the internal or organismic factors. Because the urges, the pushes of the sensory modalities, they are so tough. Even sometimes we have very good intentions. We resolve, no, I'm not going to criticize anyone anymore. I'm not going to find fault with any other devotee. But just after that, the temptation comes. And we could become a victim. And before we know, we start regretting. Oh, I had vowed the other day I will never criticize any devotee. Here I am, I find myself again criticizing this devotee. What is the cause of this? This is what the counseling psychologists will deliberate on and resort to what they will call interventions. And we have been endowed, we've been given the interventions to be able to deal with all of these anattas. Prabhupada has given us dietary intervention. Prabhupada has given us sonic therapeutic intervention. And so if we simply apply ourselves to these interventions, then basically we will become cleansed of all of these impurities and become properly situated in Krishna consciousness and be able to appreciate the good qualities of the devotees. What is the dietary intervention Prabhupada has given to us? He said, we should take only Krishna prasad. If we take only Krishna prasad, we will become cleansed of all of these anantas. And what is sonic therapeutic intervention Prabhupada has given to us? He said we should chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And if we look properly, you know, sometimes you know we have so much, and perhaps we don't even know what we have. Yeah. In this country, we have so much that we don't, you know, if someone can have so much money, okay, have so many accounts that he can't really figure out how much money he has. That's our situation. We have so much that we don't even know how much we have. So, we have to be able to count our blessings. Here you are, you are very blessed, especially those of you who are living in the temple here. You have ample opportunities to be able to rise, to raise your consciousness in Krishna consciousness with leaps and bounds. You can accelerate in Krishna consciousness like anything if you become determined, like Garuda. You know how Garuda is determined? You know that story? The Garuda is the epitome of determination. You know that? We know of the sparrow. But Garuda is an epitome of determination. You know that? Garuda, when his aunt was always ordering him to carry the Nagas, and Garuda's mother would be ordered to carry her sister, Garuda got worried and asked, "Tell me, my dear aunt, what shall I do to free myself from your bondage? You ask me, I should carry your kids, the Nagas, the serpents, to this island, and my mother has to carry you, or here and there. What is the cause of it?" First, he went to ask his mother, "Why should I have to do all this?" The mother told Garuda that when my sister cheated me out, when we had a bet, I became enslaved to her. So Garuda went to figure out from his aunt, his mother's sister, "What shall I do to be free, to free my mother, to free myself from your bondage?" So the Nagas and their mother, they said, "You go bring nectar from the heavenly planets." Imagine it's like asking someone to build a castle in the air. You have some problem. You know, to resolve that problem, you're trying to figure out from the person. And then it says, "You go and build a castle hanging in space." Asking someone to go, asking a mortal to go and bring nectar, the nectar of immortality in the heavenly planets, is like really asking someone to build a castle in the air. Because it's, by material calculation, it's impractical. But Garuda risked himself, did everything. And because he was so powerful, he was able to go and steal the nectar from the heavenly planets and brought it. He had some intervention from Indra himself, which is his own very a close kin. And then he promised Indra, "Don't worry, I want to really fulfill the desire of the Nagas, but they will never touch this nectar. I'll bring it back to you." So the point is, he risked his life to go there. If you read that episode, and the Mahabharata, I had a story when Ridhananda Maharaj was trying to was translating the Mahabharata, and he gave these dramatic readings. So the point is, Garuda risked his own life with all sort of confrontation along the way to be able to penetrate that place and then take the nectar. It's a risk which no ordinary person could do. And in fact, if he loved his life, he wouldn't have even tried it. But he thought within himself, I have to sacrifice my life for this because I want to free my mother from this bondage. So the point is, you are all here, especially the brahmacharis. You are taking to Krishna consciousness full time in the temple. It means you are taking a vow. I want to free myself. I want to free my mother from the bondage of samsara. We know, but sometimes we forget. We are in the ashram, and sometimes we come with very high enthusiasm, and sometimes we forget that we have to continue with that enthusiasm, or we get impacted by sociological factors which try to diminish or brings about a diminishing return in our enthusiasm. And so, being determined is a good approach to spiritual life. But avoiding unnecessary criticism of devotees is a preeminent factor that will allow us to excel in our devotional culture. Because it's very easy to find fault with anybody. If even you want to find fault with your spiritual master, you can still find fault with your spiritual master. Why not? Lord Krishna, Susupal found so many faults with him. They were trying to worship him at the Rajasuya Jagya, and then Susupal said, because he killed a water snake. Because he killed a water snake, and you want to worship him as a great personality? Yeah. So, the point is, we have to be able to realize and practice that a devotional culture that is geared towards really appreciating the values of the devotees, that will allow us to excel in our devotional service very quickly. Antithetically, if we are embarking on fault finding like Bali, then that could stagnate our devotional culture. And so again, we have to choose what we would like to do. Because Lord Krishna, after speaking Bhagavad Gita to some extent to Arjuna, he told Arjuna, so you choose what you want to do. But obviously, we should opt for positive devotional change. It means we want to imbibe a culture that is geared towards spiritual emancipation. And therefore, we are prone to to brush aside the Asura Bhava and embrace the devotional bhava. And that means we have to try as much as possible to minimize our envious nature, and of course maximize our appreciative thinking. Now, we can't become mediocres. We can't say I'm going to be in the middle. No. If we are not doing one thing, then we will actually be doing the other thing. It's just like Padma Purana says, there are two types of entities, the demons and then the devotees. We can't say, well, I don't want to be a devotee, I don't want to be a demon. There's nothing like that. Huh? Even the idea of trying to control is an Asura Bhava. The idea of just trying to control is Asura Bhava. So, we try to do that, and we don't succeed like Bali. They try to control, and now Indra and other demigods, they're having upper hand, and they're feeling very disturbed. And then it's just a fine fall based on Shastra. Come on, you're not very learned, man. You're not supposed to be elated because you won this battle. So we have Shastra, we could be very learned, we could be highly philosophical, we could preach very nicely, but we have to be careful that we don't get affected by envy. We don't get affected by fault finding, because they create all their obstacles on the path of devotion. Hare Krishna. Are there some comments or some questions on this point? Normally, these are not good topics for morning discussion, because it sobers us, and we're supposed to go out gyrating for our daily activities. But it's the text. I don't like to run away from text and start talking about my realizations. I like dealing with the text as it is and how to relate that to our everyday devotional culture. And so there are basic phenomena there, and one of the phenomena is that of fault finding, which is clearly exhibited here overtly, not even covertly, overtly by Bali Maharaj. And then again, that is rooted in a warfare that brought victory to the demigods, and the fundamental principle of the warfare was envy. So are there some comments? Yes.
Maharaj, regarding the position of Bali Maharaj, it's not clear, because we consider Bali Maharaj as a pure devotee. So was it a transformation? It happened when we met Vamandev, or...
No, but here he is actually... Papa mentions that he, at this point, he is the commander-in-chief. Commander-in-chief of the Asuras. We're talking about the face value now. He, at this time, is the commander-in-chief. And so, even the demons, the so-called demons, I mean, it's just like the devotees also, they may be infected by demoniac mentality sometimes. And what does demoniac mentality mean? Lord Krishna mentions in the Gita that a demoniac mentality implies someone who is trying to enjoy, someone who is trying to control, someone who is saying, he is my enemy. Okay, my other enemy has been killed. I will also try to kill him. He's a perceived enemy. So the concept of enemy is just a perception. And Lord Krishna mentions that this is simply due to, you know, a bad vastu gyan. He mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, when we have these dualities of, you know, this is good and this is bad, then we tend to think of people who are enemies. But who is our real enemy? Who is our real enemy? Our uncontrolled mind. Our uncontrolled... Lord Krishna mentions in the Gita that the uncontrolled mind is the worst enemy. Because all that we are perceiving is simply due to the perceptions of our mind. And so, Bali Maharaj here if we even take it in a purely phenomenological setting, he is showing us how we should not be engaged in fault finding. Because fault finding is not a divine quality. And his status here is that he is on the side of the Asuras right now. So even a devotee, devotional service, there are different hierarchies of purity. If you read Sanatana Goswami's Brihat Bhagavatamrita, you see the different levels described there. That someone is simply emerged completely in the ocean of transcendental bliss, and he has no business else with anything in this world. So we can't go and jump onto that platform. We are embarking on Sadhana Bhakti. At best, we are supposed to be sadhakas. So as sadhakas, we have to be able to see those things that we need to be able to facilitate our devotional upward mobility, and those things we have to avoid so as not to get ourselves encumbered on the path of devotional acceleration. I don't know whether I've addressed your question. You're asking about Bali. Bali basically is commander-in-chief of the demons right now. And he challenged Indra. And even the so-called, you find that he eventually became, Vishnu took everything from him. And he sent him down to hell. But Vishnu became also his associate there, isn't it? So, we can't really understand why Krishna does what he does, how he does what he does. It is very difficult, even for a pure devotee. We can't understand why a pure devotee does what he does, how he does what he does. It's very difficult. And about what I mean, just mention, again, also that it is very, very difficult to understand why Krishna does what he does. And therefore, the devotee is simply, like the gopis, they're just satisfied with being with Krishna. Therefore, one time Radharani, and that the story is mentioned in the Gopal Tatani Upanishad, how Radharani and some of her friends, the gopis, they went to meet Krishna, and they were simply making inquiries. What shall we do to be able to have the association all the time? And so Krishna said, they were asking, whom shall we feed? You know, we have this tradition in the Vedic culture to feed the Brahmins, to feed devotees, but by doing that, you get a lot of pious merit. So the gopis, they were asking Krishna, what shall we do? Whom shall we feed? To be in your company all the time. Because not being in the company of Krishna could be dangerous. This is the point. Not being in association of devotees could spell danger. Because the Bhagavatam again stipulates or spells out the fact that in this material world, every step we take could be dangerous. And therefore, instead of staying far away places to be able to come to the temple once in a month, most of you are staying just within the environment, within the community here, so that every day you can come to Mangarati, so that every day you can come to have darshan, so that every day you can come to Bhagavatam class. This is the very essence of our human existence. This is the perfection of life. And so when the gopis went to meet Krishna, Krishna told them that you go and feed Duvasa Muni. Now keep in mind that Duvasa Muni is an incarnation of Lord Shiva, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. So the gopis, they said, oh, Duvasa is on the other side of the Jamuna. We are little girls. I mean, how are we going to cross Jamuna? You know what Krishna told them, right? You know what he told them? Krishna told them, oh, when you go to the bank of the Jamuna, just chant this mantra. He said, which mantra? Oh, Krishna is a brahmachari. But the gopis, they know that Krishna plays with them even in the dead of night. Can a brahmachari play with young girls at the dead of night? No. I remember last year when I was a Nasik, so one Mataji was telling me, she brought her son, and she was telling me that, you know, the boy, the boy came to tell her one day that, oh, mommy, I want to be a brahmachari this life. So the mother immediately challenged him that, you cannot be a brahmachari. I come to pick you from the school, I mean, every day. Each time I come to pick you, I see you playing with young girls. Brahmachari, you can't play with girls. So now the gopis, they know that Krishna plays with them, and Krishna telling them, go to the Jamuna and chant this mantra, Krishna is a brahmachari. Ah, this is a little bit contradictory now. But, you know, they had faith in Krishna. They know that Krishna is an amazing boy. He can do anything, and whatever he tells them, if they follow it, I mean, success will be guaranteed. So, again, they had faith in Krishna. So anyway, they went to the bank of the Jamuna and just chanted that mantra, Krishna is a brahmachari, and the Jamuna opened up and they were able to cross to go and meet the Vasa Muni to feed him. So, the point is, they have to undergo that type of situation or they embark on that type of act. But the motivation, again, the point of motivation, the motivation was to be able to have Krishna's association. Sometimes people say, I worship the demigods. The gopis also, they worship Devata. They worship Mother Katyayani. What was the motivation of their worship? They wanted Krishna, the son of Nanda, to be their husband. If you want to worship demigods so that you pray to them for Krishna to be a husband, you don't pray to them to give you a good wife or a good husband or a good job, that's okay. So it's very easy for us to be able to understand what is there in the scriptures, what is prescribed. And if we follow that, the devotional service becomes very easy. It becomes an express road back home, back to Godhead. We have to perform this devotional service. It's very sweet. Susukam, Avyayam. And we try as much as possible to eschew rancor, bitterness, envy, fault finding. These are part of the gateways that expedite the going to a hellish planet. So devotees, all of you, you're highly blessed. Because some people, they try to become devotees, and even just to come to the temple is a problem. I can give you just a vivid example. Just I was in Delhi since December 15, I was in Delhi. And just recently, I left Delhi to go to Vrindavan for 10 days or so before coming here. And in Delhi, there was this little boy, 13 years old boy, and his younger brother, 9 years old. They live near the temple. The parents are not devotees. Even for them to come to the temple, this is in India, here. For them to come to the temple is a problem. The mother and the father said, no, you cannot go to the temple. So the boy and his younger brother will sneak out to the temple. They come for Guru Puja. They come for class, then maybe towards the end of the class, they leave for school. Because they are small boys, they're schooling. And one day, during the marathon, during December marathon, the boys, they were so much enthused that they wanted to also go and distribute Bhagavad Gita. So they went for book distribution, and when they came back, it was late in the night, so they couldn't come to the temple to deliver the remaining books, so they went home with their bag, and then the mother searched their bags and found the Bhagavad Gita's. And the mother said, you must return these books to the temple. You can't keep these books in this house. This is in India, here. So sometimes, we need these type of stories so that you know your fortune. Even as grown-up people, you may say, well, I'm above 18 years, so no one has any auspices over me. But even as grown-up people, parents could be antagonistic towards one's devotional endeavor. And so here, the little boy, a teenager, will ask the mother. Because, again, sometimes the mother even abuses them, beats them, battery. That's called battery. When you beat someone, it's battery. The mother will even beat this boy because of going to the temple. And then The boy played a trick. Krishna inspired him. So he asked the mother, Mommy, can I go and play cricket? He said, sure. You go play cricket. I bless you. Go play cricket. And so, because the mother has given him permission to go play cricket, each time he wants to go to the temple, he tells the mother, I'm going to play cricket. So here you are. You don't have any encumbrance. You don't have someone having to checkmate you're coming to the temple or you're staying in the temple. That is a big blessing. Now, church parents, how do we categorize them? They are small, small Hiranyakasipus. And church parents are also there on the planet. And so when we have opportunity to be in the association of the Vaishnavas in this type of setting, which expedites the devotional acceleration, we should actually hold it dearly and take proper advantage. Hare Krishna. Any other last question or comments? Anyone? Yes, Mataji.
This is a little sensitive, this question, but I really appreciate your class, and I trust you can shed some light on it. Sometimes there are situations we've seen where we happen to know somebody who's been very, very, very hurt, maybe in a devastating way in their life, by somebody who's still practicing Krishna consciousness. So we don't know the karma, it's complicated, and we want to be well-wishers. And we find ourselves in a situation where we're interacting with this person. We're not in a position to confront them in any way. Krishna hasn't really dealt with them yet. So here's this other party who's been quite devastated that we have sympathy for. And here's somebody who appears to be practicing Krishna consciousness and maybe even is getting some accolades in the position that they're in. So the heart is conflicted. We're not wishing them ill, and yet there's some deep sadness. So can you address that?
Yeah. The point there is, if someone is undergoing some tribulations in his or her spiritual life, our best bet is to be able to see how to facilitate the extrication, his or her extrication from that type of devotional encumbrance. Because if we accept in principle that everyone else is Krishna's part and parcel, Krishna mentions in the Gita, Mamaya Vamsa Jiva Loki, then everybody around us, whatever problem someone has around us, we should see that problem as our problem. And that is why, otherwise, if that is not the case, why would Prabhupada leave Vrindavan to go and get heart attacks on the sea aboard Jaladuta? What will he gain? Just to be able to see that people get some sukha from their intense suffering. And so, that is the concept of compassion. Compassion is different from simply being empathic. Empathic means that we really put ourselves in the position of the other, but the suffering of that person. We feel it. And we feel that, oh, this is too much. It's really hurting me also. And we try to encourage a person. But compassion implies, if you go into the etymological root of that word compassion, it implies taking the burden of someone else. Yeah, like we are compassionate towards our children. And then we may say, I have had people even say this. Sometimes even our managers in some places. They say, well, I have to treat my wife and my children differently. And I treat the devotees differently. Because even Krishna treated the member, his member of his family differently. But again, that is completely opposite the case as per the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam says that a leader should provide for the needs of the members of his constituency just like he would for members of his family. And so if we find someone undergoing some suffering, some disturbances, some problems, we should see that person as a member of our immediate family, and we should do everything possible to see how that person could be relieved from that type of situation. Why? Because if we do that, it becomes very pleasing to Lord Krishna. Keep in mind that Lord Krishna says, those who say they are my devotees, they are not. Those who are the devotees of my devotee, they are my real devotees. So, again, the point remains that if we see people as part and parcel of Krishna, if we see people as extensions of Srila Prabhupada, if we see the devotee as an extension of Srila Prabhupada, how will we not help out with his or her predicaments? This mindset, we are far from it, and therefore it is not very easy for us to be able to see how best we can help someone. And so, yeah, when we find someone in a very unhealthy situation, we should actually try by all possible means to give the proper association, to give that person a sense of belonging, so that the person feels, here I have someone who cares. See, some people, even within our devotional communities, when they run into real big problems, the last resort is they want to commit suicide. Yes. And someone who wants to commit suicide because of his problem or her problems, if someone really shows affection and deep love, because of that love, the person will be aroused to struggle to be able to sustain his or her equilibrium. But where the person doesn't seem to see anybody who really cares so much, then the tendency is, let me finish it. Let me finish up this body. It's too much. And so each time we try to help out someone, we're actually doing so much to please Lord Krishna. We may not even know what we are doing. It boils down to what I said earlier, that like in Krishna consciousness, we have so much, we're so rich, that we don't even know the extent of our wealth. We don't know, we can't figure out the amount we have, the amount we have in the bank balance. So, if we are kind enough to be able to be of assistance to such a person, now the tendency is, it's not my problem. It's his problem. It's our problem. No, we shouldn't feel like that. It means we are denying ourselves of the knowledge that Mama Evamsa Jiva Loke. You see, it looks like a simple thing in the Gita, you know? It looks very simple. We recite this verse. Mama Evamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Very simple. But again, when we have a concept or a construct like that, that is just the breadth. Now we have to get into the depth and then the application. And Krishna has given us everything in the Gita. We just need some way out to be able to churn out the depth and the application of the constructs and the concepts of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna has given us everything. Prabhupada has given us everything. And so we could actually be of assistance, in fact, to the whole world. Not only to members of our devotional community, but even to the whole world. So yes, there's nothing wrong in going, in stretching yourself to help someone. Sometimes people say, I have my permissive variation. I have the limit of my elasticity. I can't go beyond this limit. That is also true. But again, when we are becoming pure, or the degree of our purity is directly proportional to our range of permissive variation. And so, Jalai Prabhupada, even he encountered so many difficulties, even people who are supposedly under his shelter, they will come to do so many devastating things to him. But he didn't just damn them to hell. So when we see someone in a devastating situation, it is our duty to try our possible best to come to the rescue. We should be the source of intervention to rescue that person. And Krishna becomes very, very pleased with us. If we are just after our own growth, at best we are becoming salvationists. There are many salvationists out there. People run into the Himalayas. They are salvationists. They want to free themselves. There's too much trouble. Let me go and meditate, attain perfection, and get out from this world. It's just nonsense world. Just full of problems. But the Rupanugas are not after their own self-liberation. They are not after their own salvation. And therefore, in practice, we should also be very much imbibing the culture of caring thinking. And that caring implies that we should be concerned about the welfare of others and try all possible avenues to see how we are becoming a source of relief to the sufferings of other devotees. So many people have already been wounded, even in our movement. So many people have been wounded. So many people have been hurt. We should not be a source of hurt to anyone. And when we find someone who is wounded, we should try to help out. I don't know whether I have addressed what you raised. Is it a little bit okay? Thank you. All right. So we are far beyond the time. I'm sorry, but I think it's the time what's spent, and today I'll be leaving. So I hope that I catch up with some of you in Mayapur. Otherwise, it could be the next millennium. Because I come to the Bombay area perhaps once in a year. I've been in India since November last year because I came in for a conference, the 10th Summit of the Chief Justice of the World Conference and Global Symposium of Awakening Planetary Consciousness at the Montessori School at Lucknow in December, 11 to 14. But after that, I went to Delhi. I was in the Delhi area. Then I went to Vrindavan. And now I'm trying to go to Mayapur, so I felt I should also come and have the association of all these powerful devotees in Chopat. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.